Spoiler Piece Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica, the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics.
And my name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I write for the Chicago Reader, and I, too, am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
Yes, you are, sir.
I am. And so are you.
Yeah, we both are. Woot, woot, woot. It's exciting. It's an exciting club to be a part of.
Yeah.
And we're very sad this week because Evan, our lovely co-host, is off this week.
He's in Saskatchewan. It's weird. I'm just kidding.
You weren't supposed to say that. He's deep undercover, investigating a mystery, Scooby Gang style. Okay, this has already gone off the rails.
Okay, back on the rails.
Back on the rails. But yes, so it's just Dave and I this week, and we have some movies that we're going to talk about. But before we get into that, I want to tell you about the two guest appearances on podcasts that Evan and I each did. Each of us guested on the Piecing It Together podcast. I was on to talk about the movie Polite Society, and Evan was on an episode to talk about the movie Blackberry. So go check out those episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. And I also want to tell you about this week's bonus episode for Patreon. For $5 patrons, they get to listen to our weekly bonus episodes and vote in polls. And this week, we talk about, I almost forgot what we talked about. We talked about Fast Five in honor of the 10th movie, Fast 10, coming out today in theaters.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Or should I say, ooh.
It's all about family.
Woo, family.
Actually, we didn't even talk about how Dom is always obsessed with talking about family. How did we not even talk about that anyway?
Well, this is the first movie where that really starts up.
That's true, because he talks about his father's cookout, having the cookout every like Sunday after church.
If you didn't go to church, you didn't get food.
But if you went to church, everybody was there for the cookout.
That's right.
Anyway, we have a great conversation. We have some divergent views on the film, but it's a great time as always, so go check it out. And if you're not a patron, consider joining. So for this week, the films that we're going to be discussing, we are talking about The Starling Girl and we're talking about Consecration. And funny enough, Dave pointed this out, that they're both religious themed movies and we did not plan that in advance. Yeah. Just kind of happened that way. So let's dig in to Consecration first. So Consecration is written and directed by Christopher Smith, and it's also written by Laurie Cook, and it stars Jenna Malone, Danny Houston, and Janet Sussman. Let me give you the synopsis. This is from IFC. In Consecration, after the suspicious death of her brother, a priest... Wait, what? That is not right. That is not worded correctly. Grace, played by Jenna Malone, goes to the Mount Saviour Convent in Scotland to find out what really happened. Once there, she uncovers murder, sacrilege, and a disturbing truth about her own past.
Yeah, except they never... I mean, do they explain what the truth about her past is?
Not really. It's left somewhat ambiguous.
And is it ambiguous because it's supposed to be or because they didn't know what they were doing? That is my question.
That is a great question.
I watched that entire movie and I was like, why the fuck is this all happening? Why is Jenna Malone in a nun's habit covered in blood? What?
And zipping around it and going back in time.
Going back in time and also like being very soft-spoken and not seeming to know what's going on herself. Mm-hmm. And having these weird child flashbacks that she's also in as an adult.
Yes.
With, you know, beating her dad with a cross. But that scene is so clumsy, just not because he falls down, but because like twice in the movie, they go back to that and something hits him in the back of the head and he falls and he looks like he's dead. And then cuts away.
He does.
And then she goes and visits him in prison in the present. And it's like, wait a minute, he's alive?
Right.
The fuck is this shit? So, as you can tell from my what the fuck is this shit question, I had some really serious problems with consecration. Mm-hmm. But maybe we should get into plot before I start pissing all over it.
Okay. Because
maybe you liked it a lot. I don't know.
No, I didn't.
Okay, good. I was going to say, because
No, and I like, and I know you do too. I like Jenna Malone a lot.
I do, yeah.
And so I was really excited for this because I like her so much. And I was like, ooh, she's leading a horror film. And I know she's starred in other horror films. But I was very excited. And then I watched this and yeah, I found this very ambiguous, but also like you, I'm like, wait a minute, is it supposed to be? It doesn't feel like it's supposed to be. It feels kind of like it wasn't finished. And
yes.
It feels very convoluted, but yet not.
So is she the Antichrist or some archangel who's fallen?
I think that's what they think, as in they, the priest Danny Houston and the Mother Superior.
Right.
I think that's what they think, that she's, because they're looking, they keep talking throughout the film about how they're looking for this relic and they need a relic, this relic to come back to the church and they need to consecrate it and all of this and that. And then at the end of the film, yeah, Mother Superior says that she is the, she tells the detective who's investigating the death, the murder of her brother. And apparently he murdered some other people too. And this detective in Scotland is investigating that. And that's what she tells him. She's like, Grace is the relic and she knows it too. And she has powers. And then after that, then that's when we see Grace go back in time and do all the, like all these things where people would go to attack her, but then they like kill themselves or like weird, like things would fall from the sky. And like, I'm sorry, Danny Houston dies by a cross stabbing him from above. Like that's just wild.
Yeah.
But anyway, but apparently it's her gone back in time.
And apparently in that moment, she's in two places at once.
Yes. Yes. Right.
So she's not in two places at once in all the other. Well, mm-hmm. I guess technically she is.
Yeah, when she's a child. Yeah, because she's hiding under the bed and her father collapses because the adult her attacked him.
And then her brother gets pushed out of the car.
Yep.
And left on the side of the road. I didn't understand what that was about either. Obviously, the people who tried to adopt her from this. Is this a monastery or a convent? I can't remember. It's a convent.
I think it's a convent.
Because it's all nuns. Obviously, they're trying to take her to like consecrate her or kill her or
yes,
something.
Yes.
But they just leave the brother on the side of the road.
Apparently.
And then he wanders off and becomes a priest. I mean, how does that even like, I really think there's a good 25 years of story there where we need to know what's going on with him. Like, why did he become a priest? Like,
right.
What happened to him after he's left at the side of the road? You see her as an adult in the nun's blood covered habit show up, but like, what does that signify? Obviously, she didn't kill him like she kills everyone else.
Right,
you know?
Right. And she also, as the adult her, because she's also with her brother, but she's also in the car and she buckles the child version of her seat so she'll survive. So then
she crashes the car, yeah.
Right. So then did the two of them as children go off somewhere else? But even so, right, why, like, what happens to them? Where do they go? Why does he become a priest? You're right. Like, is it because he thinks he can save her? Is it nothing to do with that? Like, what is it? What's the motivation?
Why does Jesus go from being 12 to being 30 in the Bible? You tell me. I mean, there's a lot of time missing
question.
In there, you know?
That is the big million-dollar question.
So, yeah, the other thing... And this is, I can't believe, this is so dumb, I have to believe it's accidental. That her character, before she's like the nun in the blood-covered habit, mm-hmm. is an ophthalmologist.
Yes.
But she can't see her own past or her own future. Just someone shoot me. You know? Like.
So...
And she also, but if she's evil, then why does she restore that woman's sight?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if she is evil. And that's what kind of...
She doesn't think she is.
She doesn't think she is, right. And that's kind of interesting because it kind of juxtaposes with that, with the other nun who's like, what is it like to be a good person? I think I'm a bad person. And she's like, oh, no, no, you're really not. You're a good person. And I'm like, well, how do you know that? You don't even know her. But that's very, but like... Is that to indicate that she doesn't know she's a bad person? Is she a good person? Is it I don't know. Like, it's just, it's very murky.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about this is clearly got some sort of Catholicism, mysticism wrapped up in it that I don't know because I was not a Catholic. Like, I don't know anything about consecrated earth or places or, you know, anything like Protestants just don't have that. So,
no, you don't,
or at least not in the same way.
You don't have all the pomp and ceremony and mysticism.
Right. I mean, you know, we do have Lutheran guilt if you happen to be a Lutheran, but.
Oh, which well, is, Catholic know. Guilt is there too. So yeah.
No, I know that's something that Catholicism and being a Lutheran have in common, mm-hmm. but yeah, I just don't understand so much of this. And I know some of it's because there are parts of like Catholic liturgy that mm-hmm. I'm not familiar with. But I think also I don't understand some of the things in this movie because they don't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, yeah. So I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I was raised, I'm not religious at all by any means. I'm not a Catholic now, but I was raised Catholic. And I will tell you, that did not help me. That didn't aid my understanding or any clarity of this film. Something that I did not know that I read in reading about the production of this film was that the idea, the genesis of the idea for this film was the fact that if something to do with if somebody dies on church grounds, it's considered unholy because it's not consecrated, something like that. And so
I think that's the whole basis of like Fulci's movie, The Gates of Hell or City of the Living Dead. Now, a priest does hang himself in that, so that's different.
Yeah.
That's a priest dying by suicide, but he does it on church grounds. Mm-hmm. And then it unleashes the dead.
Yeah. So. Well, that's what happens here is her brother commits suicide or quote unquote, God's going to catch him because he backs up.
Yeah.
As like a sacrifice because of grace. Because she visits him later. Yeah.
And she says to him, she's like, well, let me save you or whatever. And he's
right.
like, ooh.
I have to do this.
Yeah. It's all so vague that
yes.
it's just like. To quote from my favorite movie, The Shawshank Redemption, it's obtuse. That's like one of my least favorite movies.
I know. I was just going to say, you don't love that movie.
No, I don't. I hate it. Yeah. Prison should be so easy. That's all I'm saying. So, the other thing about this, it does open up and close with the most ridiculous visual I've seen in a long time. On screen.
The nun pulling the gun?
Which is a nun pointing a gun directly at the camera. And when you first see it, you're like, oh, this has got to be a dream or like some sort of like whatever sequence.
Right.
And no, the movie ends with that scene with the nun pointing the gun at Grace after she's back in London, having had dinner with her other ophthalmologist friends saying, oh man, it's going to be a long time till I go to another church. And then the nun is run over by a taxi in the worst car hitting a human body since Brad Pitt got hit in Meet Joe Black.
Oh, I didn't know that happened.
That happens in the first 15 minutes, so I'm not spoiling anything for you.
I don't care.
But like, it's just such bad, like, computer graphic work.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think this was not a very big budget, so.
Sure.
But I guess you could make the argument, if you don't have a big budget, maybe don't have that be the scene, rework it.
I would think that it would be actually, if you had a talented stunt coordinator, you could do the thing where you've got like the actor in the harness mm-hmm. and then you pull the thing back.
Sure.
And now granted, even in the best movies, that looks like someone's being pulled back.
Yes.
But I think because it's a real body, it still looks better than the weird, like, computer nun on top of the cab, and then the real body, real person, stunt person's body falling off the hood onto the pavement.
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
So I guess what I'm saying, listeners, is what the fuck is this movie? Don't see it. I mean, it's just the other thing about it is it's not scary, like, even a little.
No, but I mean, I always say, and I've said this repeatedly, horror doesn't have to be scary. So
it doesn't have to be scary, but it's also not horrific. It's just, it's
ambiguous. To her it is.
But there's nothing, to her it is, but I also think, and I don't think this is Jenna Malone's fault. You know, her character is up until like there are two of her and one of them is like committing all these crimes.
Right, right.
She's so passive, you know,
yes.
that
yes.
it's like, you know, she's just a cipher, which I think is the point. But at the same time, you know, if you're going to be a cipher, have it played by Robert De Niro in what's the movie he's in where he actually plays the devil and his name is Lou Cipher.
I don't know.
The one with Mickey Rourke.
Oh, Angel Heart.
Angel Heart. Yeah.
For a minute, I was thinking Devil's Advocate, but I was like, that's Al Pacino. That's not yeah. De Niro. Yes, Angel Heart.
So anyway.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that because I kept thinking that too. I was like, why the fuck is she so passive? Like, because, so I guess to flesh out the plot a little bit for everybody, because we kind of just jumped right into the end. So she finds out that her brother has been killed or has died. And so she goes to Scotland, to the Isle of Skye, to this convent to find out what happened. And she's kind of getting the runaround from the Mother Superior and the priest there, played by Danny Houston. And by the way, whenever Danny Houston is there, you know he's going to be the antagonist, like always, no matter how nice he is. And
he's not like really antagonistic, though, even when he is the antagonist.
No,
in this.
That's true.
He's just like, very, get in the crypt.
He's very
We're
subdued.
Gonna consecrate you. Whatever.
I know, right? We're gonna bury you alive. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But yeah. And then so then she passes out and she's been having like weird visions, weird dreams. And then she wakes up and her clothes are gone and she's dressed in like a nun's outfit that the other nuns there wear. Yeah. And it's basically her just kind of wandering around and being like, where's my clothes? I want my clothes. And nobody giving her clothes.
That is a big part of it.
Right? She's like, I want my clothes. No, your clothes are dirty. The Mother Superior needs to clean them. No, I don't care. I want them. Like so much of that is her wanting her clothes, but she doesn't do anything. And that's the thing. It's not like she tries to leave. It's not like she tries to get her clothes, but she stopped or she like walks into some like weird ritual or some creepy situation. So yeah, I do know what you mean. Like even though, and I guess my point is that, you know, it doesn't have to be scary to be horror, but at the same time there, it doesn't feel like there are any stakes. Like it doesn't feel right. like anything is happening. Even when she's talking to her friend back home and she's like, yeah, I feel like I'm losing my mind here. I don't really feel like she's losing her mind,
no,
even though
she seems completely the same.
Right.
And also she doesn't seem to be any kind of existential threat to anybody except for the nuns at the convent.
Right. Right. Who are a threat to her.
Yeah. I gotta say, and I'm not sure fewer nuns is a bad thing. Not that you need to dispatch with them, but you know, especially this order, which as the local Scots people say, is kind of like, these are my words, but this is what they mean, that these people are psychos in this.
Yeah,
convent.
They're like really like fire and brimstone and
they like probably still preach in Latin. I mean, you know.
Well, yeah, they probably do because the Mother Superior and Danny Houston are talking in Latin. So, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But yeah, but that's the thing. Like, and I kept thinking like, oh, okay, she's not bad. They're the ones who are bad and she's misunderstood. And that's the thing. Like, is that what we're supposed to be left with? That she actually is the Antichrist? Or are we supposed to be left with, no, she does have these magical, mystical powers, but because she's a woman, they misunderstand her and think she's the Antichrist?
Or
and
maybe
so,
just
and
because
she's
really
not?
Or maybe just, maybe it's not even about that specifically. Maybe it's just like, this person has these powers and because Danny Houston says this twice, he says, there is God and then there is me. And it's
yes,
like,
yes.
Oh, well, she's not him and mm-hmm. she's got powers, so she's got to go.
Right.
It could be that.
Could be. Maybe she's God. Oh.
Maybe. I mean, I can think of worse things than Jenna Malone being God, I guess. So.
Right? Right?
Yeah.
And that would also make sense. I get like maybe they can't wrap their heads around the fact that she is God. I don't know, or a God or something. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
It's like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. I'm not the God. I'm a God.
Very true. Very true. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I like that we're digging into these questions and that we have these questions. And I'm okay, and I know you are too, I'm okay with ambiguous films. Like it doesn't have to be all, actually I prefer when it's not all neatly tied up. But this, the just, it doesn't feel like, why do I care? Like, it doesn't feel, like I said earlier, it doesn't feel like there are stakes. Doesn't feel like her mind is unraveling or anything. Like, I don't feel like I'm in it with her.
Yeah.
It just is like, oh, she's looking for her clothes. They took her clothes.
And I keep going back. I keep going back to the thing where she's like, you also have to understand, like, when she was a child, she and her brother were put in cages by,
oh my God,
his real father and her adoptive father. And it's like, well, you know, I, you know, killing is wrong. But at the same time, if I were a child who was kept in a cage all the time, you know, violence might be the answer.
Yeah, I'm all right with killing that guy. Which, so, by the way, sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, I just don't, kind of like her, not understanding that she's evil. It's just like, what? Oh, I do have to mention also the scene where the brother's being pressed is so unintentionally funny. Because when the other priest is like, more weight, and then the nuns start jumping up and down on the press, it's just like, no, nuns jumping up and down on a flat older is not, it's just funny because it's like they're being the flying nun, all of them. But
yes.
And that show wasn't even funny, so
no. The so now I'm thinking about Sally Field and the flying nun. The one thing I will say, and this is one thing that I liked about this film, and I wish it had kind of been potentially explored more, is I like at the end of the film when Grace says to her friend, when he asks her like how therapy is going, and she's like, well, I'm going to tell you the answer I'm supposed to say. Like, you know, you take it one day at a time. And she says, I'm realizing that my body remembers things that my mind just can't. And that obviously ties into the whole fact that like her and her brother write in code to each other when they're kids, and he is writing to her this letter, this book essentially, so she can read it after he's dead. And he's talking about how Grace doesn't remember things. She doesn't remember her past. But what I like about that is that's really true about trauma. Like, it's very, very true. Therapists talk about this, that it's very common that if you've been through traumatic situations, if you struggle with PTSD, that you do not remember, like you'll just have gaps in your memory. And so that's a really real thing, but that your body will react to things as if it's a heightened situation or in danger. So I like that that's mentioned, but it's never really integrated into anything. And I think that that's unfortunate because I think it's a missed opportunity to kind of explore trauma as far as the ramifications of it, other than just, hey, my stepfather or adoptive father is an abusive piece of shit and locked me and my brother in a cage and I saw him stab my mother to death.
Yeah.
And also, why is she going to the prison to ask him about herself and her mother? Like, I just, that annoyed me. Anyway.
And also, why does she stand over her dead mother's body? Because she didn't, like, we saw every time that someone kills themselves or gets killed in this movie, you see her in the nun's habit, like actually doing the work.
Right.
But her father is clearly still the one who killed her mother.
Yes.
So why is that a bad memory? It's a bad memory because you don't want to see your father kill your mother. That I get. But why is it bad in the sense, why is she standing in there in the bloody nun's habit being like, as if she had stabbed her mother, right, like she stabbed those other two nuns, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I also don't care. I can't believe I've spent this much time thinking about it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I know, for a movie that neither of us were really enamored with, we have spent a lot of time talking about it. Do you have any final thoughts?
No. I just, my final thought is why, oh Lord, why? There you go.
My final thought is, Jenna Malone is exceptionally talented and is wasted here.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. Yeah. All right.
Let's
talk about The Starling Girl. So The Starling Girl is written.
Hi, little starling. Sorry.
Oh, Clarice. The Starling Girl is written and directed by Laurel Parmet. And it stars Eliza Scanlon, Lewis Pullman, Jimmy Simpson, Ren Schmidt, and Austin Abrams. And here is the synopsis from Bleecker Street, a studio that released it. 17-year-old Jem Starling struggles with her place within her Christian fundamentalist community, but everything changes when she finds herself drawn to her magnetic youth pastor. That is true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so, yeah, I mean, basically to flesh it out a tad more, this is exactly as the synopsis says. This, like, she is raised in an extremely conservative religious community where right down to what she wears, when you can see the outline of her bra through a shirt, another woman pulls her and her mother aside to tell her so they can be helpful because we wouldn't want to attract or draw any attention to her. Jem's father is also a former musician before he became religious, and she lives with her parents and her siblings. And she then gets involved in dance troupe to put on this dance for Labor Day for the community. And it's this religious dance. And as she's doing that, she is spending more and more time with Owen, the pastor who has returned from doing a missionary in, I believe it's Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And yeah, and she's 17. He's like 28, 29. And they eventually begin an illicit affair, and she's convinced they're in love and they're gonna, you know, and God approves, and all shit hits the fan when it comes out. And yeah, we'll dive more into that. But Dave, what did you think?
Well, aside from the fact that the fundamentalists made me homicidal, I really liked this a lot.
Yay.
This is such a strange movie in the sense that, what is the youth pastor's name?
Owen. Mm-hmm.
He's clearly a creep, but he's also not a creep.
Yep. That's intentional.
And she's clearly, delusional is not the right word. She's 17, but she's also kind of smarter than everybody, a little bit.
Yes.
She's definitely, it never comes out directly, but she's ambivalent about her faith, clearly. Like, she keeps praying to, you know, make the right choice about whether she and Owen are supposed to be together, and she's conflicted about it and all this stuff. But she's not so conflicted about it that she's, like, stopping to think about it more. And then she convinces herself that it's God's plan for her. But then she leaves him. That's, you know, kind of the...
Yeah, at the very end, yes.
At the very end, she leaves him after he comes back to her, which is the part that makes me think that he's a creep, but not a creep, because, oh, he really does love her, even though their age difference is gross. At least 28 to 17 is gross, you know. 50 to 39, fine. But 28 to 17... Ugh. And also the movie's portrayal of her father, who is clearly a struggling alcoholic.
Yes.
And may or may not believe in all this stuff. It's, I mean, her mother is the one who's like the righteous one.
Yes. Yes.
And her mother is, her mother only does two things in the movie that make me think she's not horrible. One is while, after all the shit hits the fan, as you said, when the affair is discovered, and basically it seems like all the blame is being laid at, her name is Jem, Jem's feet.
Yes.
And I can't remember what her mother says when they're sitting on the sofa with the pastor, and, you know, he's talking about, like, Satan having entered her heart, which, by the way, that's the kind of thing that just... Like, I don't really want to impugn religious people, but I'm gonna.
Uh-oh.
Like, if you think, like, Satan's gonna enter your heart, you're just a child. So anyway, there's that. But, so these people are children, these adults, what I'm saying. And then also, but her mother says something there where her mother has been very, I won't say content, but that's, she's not content, but that's the word I'll use. She's been content to also blame Jem, but she says something on the sofa about how She points the blame to Owen a little bit on that. Mm-hmm. She says something like, she wouldn't have done this if Owen weren't involved, like if Owen didn't encourage it or something. It's very brief. It's almost a throwaway.
Yes.
But then at the end, when Owen comes back to the house,
oh, yep.
She catches him and she's like, this is all because of you, you know?
Yep.
That's not what she says, but it's equally as explicit, but just, mm-hmm. it's a different line. So you know that her mother is like no dummy.
Exactly.
But like, she still goes along with the fundamentalist line of Pastor Taylor, who is also a creep.
Yep.
Just because anybody who's going to stand there and tell a 17-year-old girl that she's responsible for his 28-year-old son's,
oh my God,
you know, dalliance and whatever, and, you know, have the audacity to say, well, you know, Owen's at fault in this too, believe me, you know.
And yet Owen doesn't get any repercussions.
No. Like, as far as I know, his wife stays with him.
Yep.
You know, like, and just to have to, she has to do this thing where she stands up in front of the congregation and she doesn't admit explicitly what she did wrong because everybody knows anyway.
Right.
But she has to stand up there and ask for their forgiveness because of this horrible sin she's committed and God's forgiveness. And then these people walk up and tell her that they forgive her. And it's just like, fuck right the fuck off. This is the kind of shit, by the way, that goes on every day in this country, this country being the United States.
Yes.
In the real world, that should make your hair stand up on the back of your neck. All this shit going on in Florida, all these laws that Ron DeSantis is having passed, this is all a direct result of people exactly like this. Just so we're not, you know, just so there's no minced words. Fundamentalists don't want to convince us that they're right and, you know, have us come their way. They just want to take over. So just be aware. That's the goal. That aside, it's a fascinating movie. I mean,
yes.
Eliza Scanlon is like, she's just great. You know,
yeah,
she really plays ambivalence well. She really plays... It's just kind of like, it's kind of gross to talk about a 17-year-old sexuality, but the movie does. So, all right.
I don't think it's gross. I know what you're saying.
48-year-old man to talk about it.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I think it's fair. She's finding her sexuality, so.
Yeah,
but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think she's maybe confusing her first infatuation with God has meant us to be together.
Yes.
There could be that. Maybe they really are supposed to be. I don't fucking know. Like, people get together for all kinds of weird reasons. But she's also, it shows her being, wanting to explore her sexuality. You know,
yes.
I think it's the first time they're together, which is the first time she's been with anybody. Like, afterwards, she, like, crawls back on top of him, and he's like, no, hey, take it easy. We gotta,
yep.
you know. And it's like,
that's such a creepy scene.
You just kind of... Like, she thinks she just got her world rocked, and you're being like, nah. I mean, ick. You know?
Yeah, that scene is so creepy.
It really is. But there are other moments when their relationship doesn't seem creepy, you know? Like, but it is, it's just, it's so, like, anybody listening out there who's 28, who's in love with a 17-year-old, just, you know, go check yourself in somewhere. I've been doing a lot of yapping. Do we really need to explain the plot so much? Because that's what happened. She meets the youth pastor. She becomes mm-hmm. infatuated with him. Mm-hmm. They start an affair. They're found out. Everything goes to hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only thing I would add in between that. No, and you're right. That is the plot. The only thing I would add is that she becomes kind of more rebellious as the movie goes on.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, when Owen's wife is watching the dance that she's really proud of, she's really excited that she choreographed it.
Made me so mad.
It's so sad because she's been watching youth, like other youth, Christian youth group dances that Owen shows her, and she gets really inspired. So she creates this dance for herself and the other girls who are in this dance troupe. And every 5 seconds, the wife is like stopping and she's like, well, now, see, you shouldn't be doing that because you're drawing attention to yourself. And I know that's not what you intended to do. And Jem is getting more and more frustrated, and just her anger is just seeping out. And because here's something that she was so proud of, that she's so excited about, and this woman is just tearing it apart. And it's just, and it's very clear, like, it's funny that you were talking about earlier that you're like, I don't know how religious she is or how, you know, into her faith she is. I think she's very committed to her faith, but she's clearly questioning, like, the intensity and the strictness of all the rules.
Yeah.
And I think that she's like, no, this is like, so I think she's not religious in the same way the other people in that community are, but that, you know, but I think she still is religious, just in a different way, which is okay, but not according to this community. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to question things as a girl. And I think she's kind of, you know, chafing against that. So I think that's an interesting development that we see.
It's also, I think one of the things that's difficult about it is you see that her mother, over the course of the movie, she has made all of these choices to be righteous.
Yes.
And I kind of get the impression that it's not necessarily that she doesn't believe or that she knows it's all baloney, but she kind of does, because she also knows that her husband has fallen off the wagon and that he is having struggles with his faith because he regrets giving up his life as a pretty good musician, it sounds like, at the end of the movie, when you finally hear one of the songs that he wrote and performed.
Thank you, Lord Huron.
Yeah. So, is that who did it?
That's who did it. Yeah. Ben Schneider, the lead of Lord Huron, composed the score.
Yeah.
And I love the score. I think it's stunning. And and Lord Huron performed that song, which I think is a beautiful song.
And it's a country song. It's not, it's country-ish.
It's country-esque. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but it's good. So
it's a great song. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think part of what her rebellion, not Eliza, that's the actor. What Jem's rebellion is she's got a lot of the, you know, I'll just take it to sex because that's an easy, you know, comparison, analogy, whatever to make. It's like, if God doesn't want us to have sex, why is it so much fun? You know,
do you know, I actually asked that exact same question in a science class in the 9th grade. Let me tell you how well that was received.
I'll bet it went over great.
Oh, it went over spectacularly. Yeah. And I did not go to a Catholic school or a religious school at all. I went to public school. So, but I think you're right. I think you're spot on. Like, yes, Jem is, I don't want to say using, cause she's not using Owen, but Owen is kind of like, he's the focal point, but it's not really him. It's really her sexuality. It's really her self-expression. It's just, it's kind of in the vein of
He's the embodiment, the physical embodiment of all those things.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think, so I love this film. I absolutely adore this film. I saw it at Sundance and I was really excited. And I kept talking about this film like, guys, we could cover this. We could cover this, because I think it's an exceptional film. And I'm so glad we're talking about it now, because I loved it even more the second time watching it. And I agree with you that Eliza Scanlon is stunning. She is an excellent actress. I've actually seen every single movie she's done. And she and Sharp Objects with Amy Adams, the miniseries. And she's an exceptional in all of those things. She's just such a talented performer. And I think she really embodies the conflict that Jem is experiencing in a really beautiful way, in a really fascinating way. About the sexuality, I always think it's fascinating to see the exploration of a teen girl's sexuality, and especially when you throw religion into it. And, you know, there are films that touch on that, kind of like we saw years ago, Yes, God, Yes, about...
The one I was thinking of. I couldn't remember the name of it.
Yeah, which is so good. You know, where a girl starts, you know, masturbating, and she's very religious and whatnot. But I think what's fascinating about this film is that there is so much complexity and there is so much nuance to it. And you're right. Like, when you're talking about Owen, you're like, he's a creep, but he's not a creep. That was reading about the behind the scenes of this film. That was very intentional from the director. Like, she really, and in the casting, they wanted someone who did not read as too old nor too young. So she didn't want the audience to be like, oh, well, why aren't they together? They could be together. They're perfect for each other. but also so you wouldn't be automatically repelled, like, ooh, who's this creep with her?
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because to me, I'm automatically like, oh my God, it's disgusting because it's such an abuse of power, because even though there is an age difference and there's, you know, there's gender power differential, there's an authority power differential, and the fact that he's a youth pastor and she's a student in it. And but what's fascinating is that she's all in, like she wants this, but yet it's very creepy considering those power dynamics. And, you know, it's funny because I was her age and my first serious relationship was with someone who was way too old. And, you know, you couldn't have told me anything at the time. I was like, nope, I know everything. I've got it. This is perfect. But looking back, I'm like horrified. I'm like, that's disgusting. And so, and to me, this felt very personal. And it is because Laurel Parmet was doing field work, interviewing women in a fundamental Christian community. And she was horrified when one of the women had a kind of a similar situation. And the woman was the one who was penalized, but not the dude. And she was like, well, this is so fucked up. But then
like a Sarah Polley movie, Women Talking.
Yes, Women Talking. Exactly. Which is such a great movie. But yeah, but then she started thinking about her own childhood and how very similar to myself and to probably other women too. She was in a relationship with a much older man when she was a teen, and she thought about it like, huh, I felt all this shame and I felt weird about this afterwards. And so she wanted to explore those emotions. But this feels so personal to me. This is directed and written so sensitively. And it's like, it's such a condemnation of the patriarchal constraints happening in religion. But yet it's not that she's actually like, it doesn't feel like she's actually condemning religion, but more this structuring of it, this kind of rigidity. And it's just, I just think it's absolutely beautiful. I already said I love the score. I do. I think it's haunting. I think it's beautiful. I think it feels in many moments what it feels like to fall in love or to kind of discover yourself and discover the world. I love the cinematography. I love the performances. I love Jimmy Simpson in this. I think he's great as her father.
Yeah. I kept wanting to call him Mike Mageau because of Zodiac, but like, nope, that's not his name.
Yep. Yeah. I know. I always think of his very first performance in Amy Heckerling's Loser.
Oh, see, I've never seen Loser.
Oh, but it's actually good. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's good. And he's really good in it. Although if I remember correctly, he's kind of a creepy character in that, but he's not here.
Yeah. Well, he's good. I've seen other things where he's like, better comedies where he's playing the creep and he's really good at it.
He is. Yeah. Yeah. He's also in Westworld and he plays a good guy and then a creep anyway. But yeah, no, he's a really good actor. I like him a lot. But yeah, I just think this is such a fascinating movie. I think it's so emotional. It's so sensitive.
One of the things I think is interesting about it is, and I think this relates back to Jem's mother, is how the women are indicated, or at least one specific woman, but by extension, all of them are indicated in being active participants in keeping the patriarchy afloat.
Yes. Yes.
With the we can see your bra, and also her mother, you know, saying like, if this is the life you choose, then you can't be a part of this family. She says at one point, and it's like, gross. But then like 15 minutes later, she's ready to like murder Owen when he shows up to take Jem away.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And it's that strange complexity. Like, I think that that mother actually thinks she's helping her daughter. Like, as fucked up as it is that she throws Jem out of her house, which is just disgusting and heartbreaking, I think she actually thinks she's helping her, which is disturbing. But I do. I think she thinks that.
Yeah. I now realize, though, why I could never watch Homicide: Life on the Street.
Great show.
It's because of Kyle Secor. I just don't like him. The pastor, for anybody.
Oh, yes. I was like, and?
Yeah.
Yes,
he plays the pastor.
Yes.
And in Veronica Mars, he plays Lily's dad, who her murder sets the whole show in motion.
I've never seen it.
Oh, you'd love it.
I know. I love Kristen Bell.
Kristen Bell has my single favorite line delivery of a one-word line ever in a movie, and it's in the Veronica Mars movie where there's one character who he's in the TV series too, and he's played by Ken Marino, so he's kind of comic relief.
Oh, I like Ken Marino.
And he says, he's like, wait, Ronnie, you're of age now, right? And she just looks at him and goes, yuck. But much better than I just did.
That was pretty good.
So yes, Kyle Secor, he's so good at playing a creep. Now, I'm sure in Homicide: Life on the Street, it's more nuanced than that because it's a David Simon show. Mm-hmm. But I think that his smarmy is not even the right word because there's not any charm to it. He's just so good at being just like that kind of slithery. The pastor that he plays in this is just so contemptible, mm-hmm. just Absolutely. A wretched human being. Mm-hmm. But the same as Jem's mother thinks that everything he's doing is the righteous thing. And he's not even like, and it's not like he's malicious. He's just a dick, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But you know what's interesting? I'm thinking about this because I'm thinking about the movie we saw last week, which now I can't remember the name of. The movie with the Jehovah's Witnesses and the lesbian love story. And now I can't remember.
Oh, I didn't watch that movie.
Oh, that's right.
That's the one. But it's You Can Live Forever.
Thank you. Yes, yes. I'm reminded of that. Like when Evan and I were talking about it, that there were these moments where you would, because it's such a strict religious community, you would expect some of the family members to like turn on them, like especially the protagonist. Like you would expect her, it's her aunt or her sister, I think it's her aunt, you'd expect her to turn on her when she finds out she's a lesbian, and she doesn't. She's actually very supportive. And so I think that that's interesting that that doesn't happen here. Not a surprise, though, because it also reminds me of like the miseducation of Cameron Post, where there is no sensitivity at all for queerness, and there we don't see any queer characters here. But again, there's not that level. There's no sensitivity for Jem. It's everything is put on her and everything is pinned on her because that's what happens in purity culture. It's the woman's fault. It's the woman's fault. The women are the ones who are the, you know, seductresses who are luring men to their doom, you know, which is such patriarchal sexist bullshit. It's gross. But yeah,
it really is.
It's revolting. But anyway, but yeah. Ugh, yeah. But it's so fascinating though, because seeing Owen, like you were talking about how he's not a creep, and I know we were talking about this before, but I think he's actually really manipulative. Like in that scene when after they have sex, which by the way, that sex scene is so creepy and gross and like, ugh.
Yeah, it
like,
is.
Ugh. It's, and like, I'm glad it's shot the way it's shot though, because it shouldn't be like, yay.
Well, it's not supposed to be like an, ooh, yay, this is
right.
fun.
Right.
There's definitely a moment on Jem's face where she's like, I don't know, you know?
Right? Yeah, so. And she looks highly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I guess when it's your first time that can happen, but still, no. Ugh.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He is manipulative. You're absolutely right.
I think he's highly manipulative. And yeah, I mean, yeah.
I don't
but again, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I don't think, let's throw a Jewish word in here. I don't think she'd have the chutzpah to put the moves on him. You know, he's the one who sets everything in motion with the note that he passes her.
Right, right.
So, I mean, there's definitely moments before where she's clearly, I mean, she pursues him. Let's make no mistake, because she's like, gives her bike the flat tire so she can get
right.
a ride from him.
Right.
And there's something else that she does. I don't remember what it is. And it's not long after that that he passes her that note.
Mm-hmm. We also see her at home. She's like looking at one of the booklets or brochures with his name and his picture. And she's like
his favorite food is like
Mexican food. Yeah. And I love that like another, like a teen not in a religious community would go online or would like, you know, back in the day would look at like Tiger Beat magazine, like in the 80s, you know, to look at like, you know, hunky actors. And instead she's looking at the, you know, religion church brochure.
Like, yeah.
But it shows that core of being a teen, you know, there's still some universalities, even though she's in this religious community.
Yeah.
But yeah. But I mean, the thing that's so gross is that, yeah, like, yes, she definitely is interested in him, but of course he's an adult. She's not.
Yeah, he should know better.
Exactly. And he's married, which but she does say. She does bring up. She's like, you are married. You know?
Also, though, I mean, Kentucky is one of those states where you don't have to be 18.
I know.
You know, so
yeah.
I can't remember if it's 16 or 17, but it's not 18. I know that much.
No, it's not. I know.
So in the eyes of the law.
Sure.
He's done nothing wrong, but.
Right. But it's still gross nonetheless, because I think he's abusing his position, which is what's
well, yeah,
gross.
He's in a position of power.
Yep.
He's very charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
He's obviously picking up on her cues and he's choosing to act on them.
Right. Right.
So.
Which is revolting.
And it is. But then at the end, he's like, let's run off together and go live in Puerto Rico and we'll be in a fundamentalist church there. And it's like, well, okay. I mean, you're still a creep, but at least you're not like, okay, there's nothing honorable about what you're doing. But at the same time, now it's not maybe as bad because maybe it seems like your feelings are legitimate, but at the same time, dude, just go away. You know?
Just leave her alone.
Yeah, it's just, I just don't see any excuse.
No.
For that. It's like I said, 50 and 39 is one thing, you know?
Right, right.
But like 20, 28 and 17, just, oh, good Lord.
No, it's gross.
Right. Like imagine if you're 31 years old and you bring home a 20-year-old for Thanksgiving. Now, granted, you're 31, so I don't know why you're bringing anybody home for Thanksgiving, but like, let's just say your family meets this person and it's just like, oh, you're dating a college junior. How interesting, you know?
I mean, yeah, like I said, I was a teenager. I was in high school and I dated someone much older. I know it's gross. Like I said, at that time I thought it was great, but yeah. Looking back, right, at that age, I'm like, I never would have dated someone who was a teenager when I was in my 20s. Like, that's gross.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
That is, I can't, ugh.
Yeah. But what I will say is, and I know you already mentioned this, but I really like that at the very end, she leaves to go to the bar in Nashville that her father played at.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I love that the film ends, I know we talked about ambiguity in the last film. I love that this film ends on a note of ambiguity too, with her dancing in the bar. And we don't know what happens to her. We don't know if she ever goes back to Owen. We don't know if she goes back home. We don't know if she decides to run away and lead a different life. Like, we have no idea.
Yeah. Of all those things, I would actually say, I think the least likely thing is that she goes back to Owen. I don't think she would, you know?
Yeah.
Because she clearly sees how unhappy her father is with the partner he's chosen, you know?
Yeah.
So, because that's like, that's the movie's side plot. So I think that that's important. You know, they both have these secrets.
I think the way that the film handles addiction is really interesting too, in that Gemma's really aware that, like, she knows her father's drinking again, and she tries to talk to her mother about it on a couple of occasions, and her mom's having none of it. Like, she doesn't want to talk about it. She doesn't want to acknowledge it. She's like, nope, he's fine. It's fine. And she just won't deal with it. And she's in denial. And I think it's really fascinating that Jem wants to address it head on, and she tries to with her father, and she gets hit for it. And she tries to with her mother, and she gets, you know, spurned for it. So again, she's being punished for her honesty and her directness, which is a hard lesson.
Yeah, it is a hard lesson. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway.
I was going to say something else that I find very interesting about this film is we see her. This is kind of a side thing, but I think it's a pivotal important thing to note. We see Jem eating a lot. We don't see other women in the film eating, and we see her eating donuts, and we see her eating, I don't know, other things where she's got like frosting on her face and her mom's like wiping her face off. And I think that's really interesting because we see that before, during, and after Owen, and maybe not after Owen, but certainly before and during. And I think that that's important because I think the eating along with the dancing, I think those are great visual representations of her desires that we see. It's kind of externalizing the internal. And I think that those are really, they're subtle things, but I think that they're really pivotal to who Jem is as a person. So it's not just, Owen coming along and causing this upheaval in her life. Like, she already is someone who's questioning. She's already someone who has these desires. So I just think that adds more layers of
complexity. There's a lot going on in this movie. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, which I really appreciate. And I know you do too. Mm-hmm. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, I don't. I just highly recommend it. Now you're going to have to be like me and put the feelings for fundamentalism that make you homicidal to the side so that you can watch this. But otherwise.
Yeah. By the way, I appreciate that you brought up Ron DeSantis.
Thank you.
Not that I ever like to think about that monster, but
yeah,
but it is true that fundamentalism and oppression are impacting all of us, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we would recommend, to sum up, we would recommend The Starling Girl, it opened on May 12th in New York and LA. It is now, as of May 19th, it is opening in additional cities and theaters. And we both recommend it. I recommend it highly. You recommend it?
Highly.
Yeah. So go see it if you can. And then Consecration is on Shudder today. And I think it's safe to say we'd both say skip it.
I'd say hard pass.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Jenna Malone, but I think that there are much better things to see her in than this, unfortunately. So
yeah, for totes.
Yeah. All right. Well, we want to give a huge thank you to our amazing editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you so much for making us sound so great week in and week out. We are so appreciative of you.
Thank you, Otto.
You can find Spoiler Piece Theater anywhere you get podcasts. We're at every single podcast platform. You can also find us at our website, spoilerpiece.com. You can also follow us all over the place at our social media profiles. We are at Spoiler Piece Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and TikTok. So come follow us, say hello, find out about new episodes. You can also email us at spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call
at 862-21-PIECE.
Leave us a voicemail message, send us a text. Let us know, no, you're dead wrong. Consecration is brilliant. Or yes, we agree with you. The Starling Girl is also brilliant. We love to hear your comments, your questions, your feedback. Come say hi. Let us know what you think. Reach out.
Yeah.
We love all that stuff. And if you like the show, please consider rating and reviewing us at ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece. You can also go to Apple Podcasts and rate us. That really helps us out a lot. It gets the word out about the show. If you really, really like the show, consider joining our Patreon if you're not a patron already. For $5 a month, you get access to weekly bonus episodes. You also get to vote in monthly polls, and you also get access to, we haven't calculated it out recently, but we believe it's around 300, give or take, bonus episodes, our back catalog of bonus episodes. As I said at the top of the show, this week's bonus episode was on Fast 5 in honor of Fast 10, the latest Fast and the Furious film. Well, we don't talk about Fast 10. We talk about Fast 5. But anyway, right. I digress. So if you're a patron, go check it out. And if you're not a patron, consider joining. We also have merch. Spoilerpiece.com will take you to our merch page. You can get t-shirts, tote bags, sweatshirts, you name it. It's there, and you can rock your love for Spoiler Piece Theater.
Woo-woo!
My name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association, and I'm a member of Gallica. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS. And I'm so sorry, Heather. I want to give a huge shout out to Heather, our patron. What is it, Dave? I never
sponsor
remember.
Piece patron.
Our sponsor piece patron. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather. And my name is Dave Riedel. I write for the Chicago Reader, and I have written for lots of other places. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. And if you want to follow me on the socials, I am on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd, Dave Sees Movies.
All right, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.